Hey, summer is here, just about around the corner. I don't know if you guys go on holiday or if you're going to have a vacation soon, but my family, we always have a beach vacation. I grew up on the beach on the East Coast of the United States. And so we've been taking our family there for 25 years. Most of my kids are grown and out of the house now. But I am very grateful for lifeguards that are on duty at the beach, especially for my youngest son. He's 23 years old now, but my youngest son has epilepsy. And so he, from time to time, will have seizures, which are pretty scary. And so he likes to go in the water. He'll be with his brothers. But one of the things I do is I always go up to the lifeguards, and I don't let my son know this, but I go up to the lifeguards and I ask them to keep an eye on him, just to let them know he has epilepsy and he has had seizures, and just please keep an eye on him. And lifeguards are great. Lifeguards are, they're always scanning. To see what's going on, and they're aware of the ocean's conditions, and at the first sign of trouble, they'll blow the whistle is what they're going to do. And if the current is taking people down the beach, or if they see somebody going out too deep into the water, they'll blow the whistle, call them back in. And let me just say this right off the bat: sometimes it's a struggle, and you get really tired out there. The tide pulls you out, waves are battering you, and in all honesty, that's the same thing with ministry. And some of you know what it's like to struggle. Sometimes you feel like you're over your head. Sometimes you feel like you're being battered by waves. You're exhausted. You can't touch bottom, so to speak. And you're just being sucked out deeper and deeper into problems. And there doesn't seem to be anybody there to help you. It's easy to get tired in ministry. It's also sadly easy to get tired of ministry. And ministry leaders and pastors in that condition can be in dangerous territory. And just like sadly, many people drown in life. Just recently, within the last couple of years, there was a stat done of Europe. In 1 year, 23,000 people drowned. They lost their lives, and for different reasons. I personally don't want to drown in ministry. And I don't want you to drown in ministry. And I had three friends last year leave the ministry for different reasons. And it was heartbreaking to see that. I want God to bless your ministry. I want you to be able to swim and swim well, to be able to navigate the different tides that are going to come and the waves that are going to crash, and that God would just bless your ministries. Because let's face it, as ministry leaders, pastors, we can get exhausted and we can drift away and we can be tempted to quit. And maybe that's where some of you are even here today. And so we need to recognize these dangers, and we need to listen to the lifeguards, especially when they blow their whistles, because each and every one of us, myself included, needs to improve my swimming technique, needs to improve my ministry technique, so that I can swim better. And I want you to turn to Exodus chapter 18. If you have your Bibles, turn to the book of Exodus chapter 18. The verses will also be on the screen for you as well. Familiar passage and a very important passage, as we're going to learn about help for those who are overwhelmed in ministry when our all doesn't seem to be good enough. And these are really lessons on life and lessons on leadership. And we're going to see a man who is absolutely exhausted and he's treading water. He's struggling to stay afloat, so to speak. He's sinking instead of swimming. He's caught in this undertow and he's being sucked deeper in this current, farther and farther. And at first glance, this guy looks like a really strong swimmer. I mean, but even the strongest of swimmers can drown. And that's what we're going to see happening. So, whether you've served in ministry for 50 years, or whether you're brand new to some ministry, a parachurch ministry, an organization, or your church, whether you're an established church that's 150 or 250 years old, or you're a church planter, this applies to you and me. Whether you're a lead pastor or an associate pastor, a parachurch ministry again, no matter your position, no matter your age, we are all in danger of drowning when it comes to serving in ministry. So let's go ahead and let's look at this healthy reminder found in Exodus chapter 18, starting in verse 13 of Exodus 18. The next day, Moses sat down to judge the people. They stood around Moses from morning until evening. When Moses' father-in-law saw everything he was doing for them, he asked, "What is this you're doing for the people? Why are you alone sitting as judge while all the people stand around you from morning until evening?" Moses replied to his father-in-law, "Because the people come to me to inquire of God. Whenever they have a dispute, it comes to me. And I make a decision between one man and another. I teach them God's statutes and laws. What you're doing is not good," Moses' father-in-law said to him. "You will certainly wear out. You're certainly going to drown," in other words, "both yourself and these people who are with you, because the task is too heavy for you. You cannot do it alone." What we're going to do is we're going to start by looking at some internal changes that need to take place in my life and your life. That's where we're going to start, with these attitudes, because until something changes on the inside, in my thought processes, nothing's going to change on the outside. So help for those overwhelmed in ministry when our all doesn't seem to be good enough. Here's the first thing that I learned as I study this passage. Listen to outside objective opinions. Listen to the lifeguards. Listen to the people who are blowing the whistle on you and me. And we've got to listen with humility and willingness to learn. Now, why is this important, to listen to outside objective opinions? Because fresh perspectives can be life-changing, okay? Life-changing in a church, life-changing in a ministry, life-changing in a marriage, in a family, life-changing in our lives. There's nothing better than like a new set of eyes that comes in and sees something with a new perspective, different viewpoint. And you know what that's like. You may have a new person visit your organization or visit your church, and they come in and they see all of these things that could be improved right away. You know what it's like to go to a restaurant and you look around and you're thinking, why didn't they do that? Why didn't they do this differently? Why did they do that? And you see things right away because your eyes are new to the situation. We get used to the way things are in our lives. We get used to the way things are in our ministry. And it's important for people who come into our lives to be able to speak to us about improvements that can be made. And by the way, that's what I'm going to ask you to do. At the end of our time today, you're going to have an evaluation form to fill out. I would love for your fresh eyes to say, "Scott, I think you could have done this better." I would love for you to be my lifeguards, to say, "Scott, I think you could have improved this." I'm all about learning and growing and improving, as you guys are, because you're taking this masterclass right now. And so let's be there to help each other out and welcome people to speak into our lives. Now, I want you to notice this was unsolicited outside objective opinion. Moses never asked his father-in-law for his father-in-law's advice. Moses never hired Jethro Consultants Incorporated. Jethro saw something and freely gave advice. Why did he do this? Because he cared for Moses. He loved Moses. He was sincere and he wanted to help him. Proverbs 27, 5 and 6. Better an open reprimand than concealed love. The wounds of a friend are trustworthy. The wounds of a father-in-law, in this case, are trustworthy. So listen when people want to share improvements, when they want to talk to you about your leading could be better, your teaching or your preaching could be better, the way you interact with people. Maybe you're too harsh with people and somebody points that out to you. You need to be more gentle. Listen to outside objective opinions because we don't know it all and there's always areas to learn. And sometimes it's harder. I think it's harder for us to be willing to learn for people when we've been in a position for a longer amount of time because we've gotten used to the way we do things, but we can always, always improve and grow. Now, fresh perspectives can be life-changing. I want you to notice we all have blind spots. Moses has a blind spot. You know what a blind spot is when you're driving in your car? The mirror is here, but you can't see the person coming up right next to you. You can't make them out unless you have a new car that has a blind spot detector, but not all of us have that. You don't see the guy coming up behind you. And so he honks at you and you swerve over. And sometimes we're oblivious to the people that are around us. And if we're not careful, we can cause accidents in our churches, We can cause accidents in our ministries and in our organizations. We can cause accidents at home, in our marriages, with our children. Because what happens is we turn into somebody else's lane. And they end up swerving, and we end up swerving. And some of us are swerving out of our lane into other people's ministry lanes. And you're hurting your coworkers. You're hurting your volunteers in your church or in your ministry organization. We've got to be careful not to have our hands on everything and be in control of everything and think we have to do everything. And that's where Moses is. He has a major blind spot in his ministry. Moses never even notices the problem. And for some of you here, and for me at times, we don't even see the problem that we have in our ministries. Or we think the problem is maybe somebody else. But in all honesty, the problem is the way we do what we do. See, Moses went to work as usual. Look at verse 13. Moses sat down to judge the people. They stood around Moses from morning until evening. What does Moses do? He's working hard every single day. He's grinding it out day after day. He's busy every single day. He doesn't even have time to think. He doesn't have time to strategize how I could be doing this better. He just had to get things done right now. What he's doing is he's putting out fires, so to speak. He's putting out problem after problem after problem after problem without having an opportunity to say, how do I stop all of these problems? Moses is sitting down. The people are standing all day long. We have something in America called the DMV, the Department of Motor Vehicles. It's where we get our driver's licenses renewed. And it is a horrible run government agency. It's inefficient. It's poorly run. You can wait forever. In Poland, in Europe, maybe you go to the city hall or an office or a district office. You take a number, you sit and you wait and you wait and you wait. And sometimes there's only one guy at the counter, probably this guy. Flash. Maybe you're familiar with Zootropolis or Zootopia or Zoomania, depending on the country. Slow going. Ministry with Moses is like ministry with Flash. It is slow going. We're told he sits all day and the people stand all day. Now, I want you to notice something. God never spoke to Moses about this. God never told him how to do his work differently. God never told him how to do it differently. This is amazing to me. God spoke to Moses in the burning bush. I mean, think about this. God spoke to Moses in the tent of meeting and his face would shine. I mean, God spoke to Moses giving him the Ten Commandments. Some things God lets us figure out in our life and in our ministries by listening and learning to other people. The question is, am I going to listen? Am I going to learn? Are my ears going to be open to outside objective opinions? Or do I get too defensive? Do I get too proud? Listen to the lifeguards in your life. I need to listen to the lifeguards in my life when they blow the whistle. And they say, you're not doing this well. It could be done differently. And I hope to be that lifeguard to you today. I pray that I'm blowing the whistle for some of you as we go through these talks. And the light bulb will go on. And the Spirit of God will encourage you. And you are going to improve in your ministry. You're going to improve in the work and the volunteering or whatever you do for the Lord. So fresh perspectives can be life-changing. We all have blind spots. Here's another one. Get out of ministry ruts and listen to wisdom. His father-in-law instantly notices, Moses' father-in-law, he sees everything he's doing. And sometimes we're doing things a long time in a less productive way. We are stuck, so to speak, in a rut. And what is a rut? This is what I mean by a rut. It's kind of like a muddy, dirty road where you know what it's like. The dirt now hardens and you get stuck when you drive down a dirt road and you can't get out of that rut. Sometimes in ministry, we get stuck in these ruts and we can't get out of it. And it's just muddy and muck and it's hard. And we need to get out of these ruts. And we need to listen to wisdom. And sometimes wisdom will come from a friend of yours. Wisdom will come from a masterclass. Wisdom will come from a coworker. Maybe your mom or dad or an in-law. Dare I say, even your own spouse. Sometimes our wives or our husbands can come to us with a really good idea and we get defensive and we need to listen to those times. The way we pastor, the way we serve in different areas doesn't just affect us. It also affects other people. It affects our wives. It affects our kids. And I just want to say this, when ministry is negatively impacting your family, when ministry is negatively impacting your marriage, your children, something has to change. I have made plenty of mistakes as a pastor, as a husband, as a father. I was in a ministry rut for a long time that was not healthy. I used to do 5 preparations for ministry a week. What do I mean by that? Well, I was every single week, I was preparing a message for Sunday morning. I was preparing a different message for Sunday night. I was preparing another devotional type message for Wednesday night. I was also preparing a Sunday school lesson on Sunday morning. And I was also preparing a men's Bible study. I was completely overwhelmed with message preparation. It wasn't good for me. It wasn't good for my wife. It wasn't good for my children. Remember when my oldest daughter was very young, she came to me and she said these words, "Daddy, can you please ask the church if you can come home more?" Oh, just a knife to the heart. I wasn't home enough. I was spending too much time studying. Let me give you some words of wisdom for you who may be workaholics. Ecclesiastes 4:6. Better one handful with rest than two handfuls with effort and a pursuit of the wind. Learn to get your rest. Trust God to provide. Psalm 127. In vain you get up early and stay up late, working hard to have enough food. Yes, he gives sleep to the ones he loves. There comes a time where we just have to trust the Lord. He's going to bless your ministry. Without all the struggle. Yes, you got to work hard, but you also make sure you get your time of rest. So fresh perspective can be life-changing. We all have blind spots. Get out of the ministry ruts. Listen to wisdom. Here's another thing. Listen to what and why questions. That's what's going on in verse 14. What is this you're doing for the people? Why are you alone sitting as judge while all the people stand around from morning until evening? Do you hear that? What are you doing? What are you doing? Think about it. What are you doing at your church? What are you doing in your ministry? What are you doing in the organization you're a part of or you lead? What are you really doing? And then why? Why? Honestly, why are you doing it that way? Why are you working all alone? Why are people standing around all day? Why are you doing it that way? And if you say, well, it's because I've always done it that way, that's the wrong answer. See, the what and the why question can be very revealing. And you may be doing a really good work, but you're not doing it in a good way. It's the old adage about a guy who's cutting down a tree, the woodsman that's out in the forest. And he's asked the question, what would you do? There's a big tree you got to cut down. What would you do if you only had 5 minutes to chop down that big tree? His answer, I'd spend the first 2.5 minutes sharpening my axe. And that's what we need to learn about in ministry. Work smarter, not harder. And we have too many pastors and too many ministry leaders chopping down tree after tree after tree with dull axes, swinging away, burning energy. We're busy all the time. We're exhausted all the time. And we need to stop. And we need to sharpen the axe. And we need to think and we need to examine the what and the why of our ministries and our service. And we need to listen to the Jethros in our lives. And I want to encourage you to invite Jethros into your life. People in your church, people you work around, sit down and brainstorm with them about the what's and the whys. How could I do things differently? How could I do things better? And be a Jethro in somebody else's life. I want to be a Jethro in your life today. I pray already you've learned some things that, again, the light bulb has gone on and it's like, oh, I could do something like this. I could do this different. I could do this better. And I want to encourage you to be a Jethro in other people's lives. Notice the dull axes they're swinging. And be willing to go up to somebody in love and kindness and one-on-one and say, hey, I've been thinking about you and the way you do this, and I think you could do this better, and talk to them. So help for those overwhelmed in ministry when your all doesn't seem to be good enough. Listen to outside objectives. Here's the second one. Everything should not revolve around you. I will say it again. Everything shouldn't revolve around you. Look at Exodus 18, 15. Moses replied to his father-in-law, because the people come to me to inquire of God. Whenever they have a dispute, it comes to me. And I make a decision between one man and another. I teach them God's statutes and laws. I want you to notice here, Moses doesn't really have ears to hear. You got to have ears to hear. Moses gets a little defensive. Wouldn't you? Wouldn't I? I mean, Moses sees nothing wrong. I mean, he thinks he's right. He's trying to do the best he can. He's been working hard. Those in positions of leadership typically don't like to be corrected. We do not like to be corrected. We do not like to be questioned. We don't like to admit somebody else has a better idea. That is pride on my part and possibly on your part. Allow someone to correct you. Allow someone to question you. Proverbs 12:15 is a good verse to remember. A fool's way is right in his own eyes, but whoever listens to counsel is wise. Let's be careful that we listen to good, godly counsel. And maybe Moses doesn't want to listen to Jethro, because Jethro is some old man who's cranky in his idea. You know, he's critical. Maybe he thinks Jethro should be minding his own business. Who are you to just come into the camp? You don't know what I'm going through. And maybe Moses is like, hello, I'm Moses. Have you heard about me? I am leader extraordinaire. I've just guided 2 million people out of Egypt. Okay. And God talks to me face to face. And by the way, I've done some miracles in my days. And, you know, like I don't need to listen to you, Jethro. I talk to God face to face. And if he has something to say to me, God's going to tell me about it. And what he doesn't realize is that God is telling him right now. God is telling him through somebody else. And we need to recognize that in our own lives. God sometimes uses other people to speak hard truth into our life. God is going to talk to us, and we need each other. And I want you to notice something else here. Be careful not to blame people. Be careful not to justify our own behavior and how we lead and the way we do things. Because that's exactly what Moses does in verse 15. Because the people come to me, is what he says. He's blaming the people for the way he is leading. Don't blame people for the way you and I lead. Just because a lot of people think you should do it some way doesn't mean you should do it that way. Good leaders don't make decisions based on what's popular. Good leaders make decisions based on what is right and best. Good leaders don't make decisions based on the pressure of other people. Good leaders make decisions based on what is right and what is best. And we have to quit worrying about what others might think of us. And some of you as leaders, maybe that's one of your downfalls. You're constantly worried about what someone else will say. That will negatively affect your leadership. God's word tells us the fear of man brings a snare, but he who trusts in the Lord will be exalted. And so there has to come a time when you got to stop fearing people and you need to do what is right and trust in the Lord. And then he justifies himself in verse 15 and 16, because the people come to me. They come to me. I'm the most knowledgeable. I'm best qualified. The people rely on me. And so all of a sudden, the spotlight, the lights are on Moses. It's all about me. It's all about me. And I want you to understand something. God doesn't need me. It's a privilege to serve the Lord. God doesn't need me here today to speak to you. He could have somebody else. It's a privilege to speak to you and spend time with you. God doesn't need you either. It is a privilege that you get to serve him. And we need to look at it that way. There's a great quote by Charles Wesley, leader of the Methodist movement. He said, God buries his workmen, but carries on his work. Wow. God is going to bury you someday, and he's going to bury me someday, just like he buried Moses. Our time to serve the Lord is very short. It's a privilege to serve our God. Moses doesn't have ears to hear at first. And I want you to notice a downfall in Moses' life. There's too many I's and too many me's in his vocabulary, and not enough us's and we's. Because the people come to me, they come to me. I make the decision. I teach. Moses is the man. Again, all the spotlight's on Moses. Everything comes to Moses. Everything goes through Moses. Everything is decided by Moses. You have a major problem in your church and in your ministry if everything revolves around you. Please understand that. You have a major problem in your ministry, and I have a major problem in my ministry if everything revolves around me or revolves around you. Too many I's and me's, not enough us's and we's. So pronouns are a really big thing today, right? What are your pronouns? What pronouns, can I say, characterize your ministry? What pronouns characterize your marriage? What pronouns characterize your life? When you talk about your church or your organization, what's your pronouns? Is it me, 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 I, or is it us? Is it we do this? See, don't be this guy. Don't be this guy. Who's this guy? Looks pretty foolish, huh? He's called a one-man band. He does it all. He decides it all. He controls it all. He micromanages everything, okay? Don't be that pastor. Do not be that ministry leader. Do not be that volunteer. You are not to play all the instruments, so to speak, in your ministry or in your church. I just want to share something about my ministry here at this church. And as Alan shared, I've been at the same church for 28 years. And my wife and I, when I was in seminary, we prayed for two things. We asked God to take us to a dead or dying church that we could see him resurrected. And we asked him to take us to one church for the rest of our lives, if that be his will. And so we've just been at this one church, and it was just a dead and dying church many years ago. And the Lord has just breathed life into it. But I want you to understand something about my leadership that I've learned through the years. I don't do it all. I don't. I didn't set up any of this equipment today. I had volunteers come in and help me out. I don't baptize all the people in our church. I don't need to. I don't chair. I don't lead all the staff meetings or the elder or oversight team meetings. I don't need to. There's other people that are more gifted than me. I don't make all the visits in our church. I don't officiate all the funerals or all the weddings here. I don't teach the new members class. I don't pick the curriculum for the different ministries and their classes. I let the teachers do that. I don't update websites. I don't pick the songs for Sunday morning. I definitely don't leave voicemails on the phone. One of my pet peeves, one of the things that discourages me, is when I call a church and some pastors left the voicemail. Man, there's ladies in the church with much better voices than those pastors. I just want to say this. I want to encourage you to involve other people in your ministry. Let other people do the work of ministry. That's Ephesians chapter 4. Equip the people to do the work of ministry. And even if your church is very small, even if your organization is very small, get in the habit of now, get in the habit now of recruiting other people to come alongside of you, volunteers, and to serve alongside of you and to do the work of ministry. Because here's the truth. If you have to do everything in your church, if you have to do everything in your ministry, you are going to hold it back. It's not going to be able to go forward. It's not going to be able to grow. You have got to let go and let other people. John Maxwell, leadership guy, calls it the law of the lid. Too many pastors and ministry leaders put a lid on their churches and they stop it from growing because they have to do everything. Help for those overwhelmed in ministry. When you're all doesn't seem to be good enough. Lessons in life and leadership. All right, so that is section one. Listen to outside objective opinions. Everything shouldn't revolve around you.